Okay, bear with me. This is going to be a longer than usual introduction, so I can explain what prompted our discussion this hour to talk about theft, why people steal, and how it hurts those of us who are the victims of theft. Last week, someone stole my wallet from my purse. I wasn't going to say where, but I will because I think it matters to the story. It happened when I was sitting right here in this radio studio, and my purse was down the hall in my unlocked office. I wasn't in the habit of locking the office when I came into the studio each morning before 6 o'clock. The doors to the floor are locked between 6 and 8 o'clock in the morning. There are very few people around. And I didn't feel like calling my purse and keys into the studio with me. But guess what? I have my purse and my keys with me right now in the studio, and my office is locked. When someone steals your wallet and racks up more than $1,000 worth of charges on your credit card and debit card, it changes your outlook and your habits a little bit, at least for a while. Has anything like this ever happened to you? Has anyone ever stole anything from you? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 9.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, February 3rd. When I posted my story on Facebook last week, a lot of friends and listeners had sympathy and advice for me, and it was apparent that a lot of people have been through a similar experience. They spoke of the violation, the anger, the fear, the loss of trust and faith in humanity. And it prompted us to call our go-to psychologist, Frank Farley, to see if he would talk with us about why people steal and what it does to the people they steal from. And we welcome your questions and your stories at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Professor Frank Farley. He is a Laura H. Carnell Professor of Psychological, Organizational, and Leadership Studies at Temple University. He is the former president of the American Psychological Association. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So has anyone ever stolen from you, Frank?
Yes. I was a student in England. That's where I got my doctorate. And I'd only been there about maybe 2 months. And, in those days, you thought of Great Britain as sort of crime-free. Mm-hmm. You know, the police didn't carry guns in those days, etc. So I'm parked in front of the psychology department in Liverpool. I was living in London, and that's where I was studying. But Liverpool, the psychology department had a piece of equipment that was unique and that I wanted to borrow for some of my research. So I'd heard about it. I contacted the department. I drove up to Liverpool, parked my car out in front, and I have this sense of trust that, you know, Britain has no crime in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And I go inside and pick up the equipment and so on. And I left my car doors unlocked. And I had a radio there in the car, a portable, that had been a wedding gift.
Aww.
And I'd only been married a few weeks. And I walked outside, and there it was gone. And that is actually the only theft that I can think of. And it was actually, it turned out to be, you know, worth a story, for me at least, because I phoned the police, and out came this British cop in his tiny little car, and he does everything. He dusts the car for fingerprints, and he's got all sorts of equipment, and he's working away, and I'm standing waiting, and he goes through all of this procedure, and then finally, when it's all over, I said, so, officer, what's the chance of recovering this? And he looks at me, and he says, not a chance at all, sir. I must say, I came away, you know, laughing. It was awful to lose this wedding present, but it was so funny. And he was right. Never heard a word again.
Yeah, and I'm sure I'm going to get over my experience. But it does. I can't describe that sinking feeling I had when I went into my purse to try to find my wallet because I was going to go to the grocery store, and at least I wasn't at the grocery store at the time. But it was like, it's gone. And it was like, wait a minute, you know, I was dumbfounded. Where is my wallet? And I backtracked, but I knew that it had been stolen. I will say that it's happened before to me here. But there is just this a feeling of being being violated, isn't it?
Oh yes, of course. And you know, we hope that in civil society this doesn't happen. But theft, petty theft, is at a very high rate. The best data, of course, are on shoplifting. You know, because that's in a specific location, and the businesses tend to keep records, and so that's where we have learned the most. And so, for example, in the last year, more than 10 million people in the U.S. have been caught shoplifting. There's an organization called the National Association for Shoplifting Prevention, and they keep records of this. And they have all sorts of numbers. 75% are by adults, 25% by kids. Those people who get caught, 55% of the adults say they started out as teenagers doing petty theft.
Is it because of desperation and poverty for the most part? Or, I mean, I've seen cases where with shoplifting that a well-to-do person did it.
Oh, yes. Well, the best evidence suggests that impulse control deficits is a big factor. It's not everything, but a very large study was done. 43,000 persons were surveyed in 2008 here in the U.S., and the conclusion was that it's sort of an impulse control issue. So somebody saw something sitting there, and they just couldn't inhibit grabbing it. And that may be one of the factors that underlies, you know, well-to-do people.
Mm-hmm.
What was the actress? Oh, gosh, her name just
I forgot her, too, but yeah, she was...
Judd.
What was it again?
I think it was Ashley Judd, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong. We could check that.
No, yeah, we will check it. It wasn't her, but I do know
okay.
Who you mean, yeah.
And why, you know? Well, it's, you know, sometimes it's just an impulse that you can't control. You know, there are certain disorders that are characterized by impulse control. So, for example, antisocial personality disorder is one of them, substance use. And in some cases, of course, people steal to feed a habit, to trade for drugs.
Yeah.
Pathological gambling is another quality that is characteristic of some of them. Some people have bipolar disorder. But one of the interesting things in that large study of 43,000 adults was there was a high rate of mental health services that they had been using prior to the theft. And so the general conclusion is that such things as petty theft, particularly shoplifting, are really more common than we know.
Yeah, it was Winona Ryder, by the way.
Oh, Winona Ryder, that's
it. Yeah,
excellent. And why, you know? And so sometimes it really is impulsive.
Not only impulsive in some situations, but you have to really be a risk taker, which I know is another one of your fields of expertise, because someone had to walk down the halls of a public building, go into an open office, and search around for my purse. It wasn't sitting right on my desk. It was under my coat, behind the door, on a hook. You had to kind of search around and take some time and lift it and then walk out with it. And the risk of getting caught is substantial.
You put your finger on a factor that I think is one of the issues, one of the key factors, and that is that thrill-seeking, risk-taking side. And because it is a risk, you know, in many jurisdictions, if you get caught three times, and it's usually treated as a misdemeanor often, but, you know, three misdemeanors, and you may be charged with a felony, and all of a sudden you're into big trouble. So I think there is a kind of thrill, excitement, risk side to it. Couple that with this kind of impulse control issue, and you've got petty theft.
We're talking with Frank Farley. He is a professor of psychological, organizational, and leadership studies at Temple University. He used to be on the UW-Madison faculty. He is the former president of the American Psychological Association, and he is kind of our go-to psychologist when we have an issue involving psychology that we want to talk about. And today we are talking about what makes someone decide to steal and how that affects those of us who are the victims of theft. And we welcome your questions or any experiences that you have. How did it make you feel if someone stole from you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll check news and then we'll be back. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Have you ever been the victim of theft? Have you had something stolen from you? We're talking about how this makes us feel and why, and talking about why people steal. And we're welcoming any questions or stories that you might have. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We are talking with psychologist Frank Farley, and our first caller is Jim in Tomahawk. Hello, Jim.
Hello.
Yes, what's your story?
I was on the east side of Milwaukee, and I got my car stolen.
Oh.
And I was playing guitar. We were in a nice neighborhood. And, you know, I left my keys in the car. I had a bunch of personal items in there also. And I walk out front, and I'm like, where's my car? You know, I thought I parked it in. Maybe I parked it in back. And I went in back, and I was in total denial that my car had been stolen. And called, we figured it out that it was stolen. And called the police, and they came over, and like the gentleman that's on the radio, the police really were no help at all. But it had dawned on me that I have a personal responsibility to take care of here, that if I am going to trust in humanity, to know that humanity is not always trustworthy, and that even though my personal beliefs are, all people are, 99.9% of people are good, that there is that part that, for the 1% I am responsible for. I'm responsible to myself. And I stopped feeling like that victim. I was like, oh, how could somebody do this to me? With the stuff that was in there. And I stopped feeling like a victim. So that's my comment.
Yeah, good. Thanks very much, Jim. I mean, I certainly said, well, darn it, why didn't I lock my office, or why didn't I lock my purse in my desk? First, I have to find the key to it. But, Frank, what's your reaction to Jim's story and his reaction to it?
Well, his reaction seems to be pretty good. I mean, he sounds like he's taken it in a pretty healthy way. The there's a famous theory, the broken windows theory of crime, which argues that if you allow disorder and the breaking of rules and so on in any neighborhood to take hold, the whole place goes down and crime increases. And what it says is that all of us need to be careful, to take care, so be sure your car is locked and you have the key with you and you know where it is, where it's parked, etc. And, my feeling is, in his case, he was sort of suggesting that, he needed to be more careful.
And I do understand what he was saying, and I do understand that we have in this day and age, we probably have that responsibility. But I felt guilty then, and I was like, darn it, why should I feel guilty for leaving my purse in my work office and not it's not treating it like Fort Knox, so it's almost a little bit of blaming the victim.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. And again, coming back to this idea of keeping some degree of orderliness and structure in our lives, and so therefore you do lock the door, you take that extra bit of mm-hmm. care. And the object of which is to keep down the level of these low-level crimes, the petty crimes. And again, that's part of that this whole theory of crime. And so it's every one of us has the responsibility to take that extra care and just sort of build it into your behavior.
Right. Well, to restore my faith in humanity, Frank.
I think humanity is also, as Jim was pointing out, is fundamentally good. We're talking about petty crimes here. And, the really bad side of humanity shows itself in the major crimes, the horrific crimes, the mass murders and serial killings, etc. But these are petty crimes. They add up, and they can be, they can hurt the victim, of course, and you can get traumatized even by a petty crime. You can get frustrated. You can develop fear that you never had before, and it can produce restrictions on your life. You may not want to go out at night anymore or go into a certain neighborhood anymore, and so suddenly your life is being restricted by what is essentially a petty crime. But the word petty is the key term here, and they are minor.
Really is. I'm not going to be held responsible for the fraudulent charges on my credit card or my debit card. It's a little bit of a hassle for me to have to cancel everything and wait for my plastic to be returned to me. Getting a new license and all that kind of stuff. There is a little bit of fear that my license is out there with my address on it, that kind of thing. But for the most part, I'm certainly going to get over it. And it could have been a whole lot worse considering the various scales of crime out there. But there was a certain, that feeling of just, having your trust dashed, realizing that, thinking, if I found a wallet sitting on a store counter, I'm not going to walk off with it. I'm gonna return it to the lost and found. I'm going to try to find the owner to that wallet. Why is it that what makes one person want to return someone's lost item and some person to steal that lost item?
Well, coming back to our earlier discussion, the kind of thrill-seeking, excitement-seeking personality may be a factor here. I think also that upbringing, where, your parents said repeatedly to do the right thing, to return it to its rightful owner, and that becomes, I think, important. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. So, if you lost something, you would like for it to be returned to you. And so, the humanity is fundamentally good. If we were fundamentally bad, we would have never survived into the 21st century.
Right.
So we are fundamentally good, and trust is one of the key, it's a glue. In civilized society, we need trust. And yes, our trust gets dashed and compromised in various ways, but keeping perspective is essential. An example that really bothered me was here in Philadelphia, a woman was accosted and the guy grabbed her purse. And she started fighting him over the purse. He pulled out a gun and killed her.
Oh, no.
And, it's perspective.
Yeah.
Whatever is in that purse is not the end of the world for you, credit card companies now, will often reimburse you for whatever the loss is.
Right.
Or banks, etc. And you can call immediately to your credit card company to stop any action on that credit card. Keeping perspective on petty crime. You don't want a petty crime to escalate into a homicide.
I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about theft, why people steal, and how it hurts those of us who are stolen from. And Keith in Beaver Dam is with us. Hello, Keith.
Hello. Sorry that for your experience there.
Well, thank you, and it sounds like you had one too.
Yeah, this last summer, I'm a deer hunter, and we had trail camera out, and of course looking for keeping track of the deer in the area and stuff like that. And we came up, and I went to check the camera, and here somebody had somebody was trespassing on our land, and were caught on camera, and they went in and they took the batteries out and deleted the card, and so it's you know, and you leave yourself, you know, you kind of feel violated. What can you do to, you know, keep people off your land or from taking something from you? And you know, you can't be there all the time. And another thing is, and you may have had this too, is who's watching you? You know, who's watching what your moves are, and you know, whether you're hunting or whatever, you're outdoors or doing your job or whatever, who's watching you? Who's watching your moves and that stuff? You know,
you wonder if the thief had been scoping you out for a while.
Right. Yeah. You're just kind of wondering, and they're pretty clever. But here's a good thing about humanity. I did find a wallet on the road. I was coming home one day, and I picked it up, and I called the police, and I didn't touch it. There was cash in there, and turned it in, and the cop came, and he said, wow, there's cash in here. He says, I don't see that every day. So some good deeds happen.
Good for you, Keith. Maybe we should share some of those good stories, too. That's a good idea. Good for you for doing the right thing. And that's interesting. Here, Keith has a trail cam up, and I'm sure it's not just to, you know, catch the bad guys. It's to check out the wildlife on his property and that sort of thing. But the thief was, I guess, savvy enough, if that's the right word, to remove the memory card and the batteries from one of his, you know, anti-crime devices.
21st century.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. That is the surveillance society that we live in. You know, the sort of two sides. There's you being observed relentlessly on cameras everywhere. On the other side are the crooks and the thieves, etc., who can hack in and surveil you.
Yeah.
And then, you know, make their move. And so the 21st century is going to be, you know, a complex process where we have better records of theft, for example, because of all the surveillance technology.
Well, in fact, I didn't mean to interrupt, but that's one of the things that the police are now investigating. They have the timestamps and the stores and the amount purchased fraudulently on my cards, and they are checking for the videotapes that most of these stores have. So if they find the person at that time charging that amount, they might be able to identify the person or persons who did this. So that's another big risk that person took.
Oh, absolutely. And just about everybody knows today that that's happening everywhere. Mm-hmm. Look at the Michael Brown case in Ferguson, you know, Missouri, where he was seen on camera stealing
right.
A small item in a store, a petty theft. And how that led to all sorts of debate about his character, who he was, etc. And so it's very standard to have that. But on the other side, the crooks, you know, the thieves, if they're sophisticated in these areas, they can hack into all sorts of things and sort of track a person's movement and see an opportunity.
Yeah. Let's take another call from Ann in Duluth. Hello, Ann.
Hi, I'm curious, excuse me, about the psychological origins of kleptomania. I had a friend who took me a while to figure it out, but she stole from stores, she stole from me. In fact, one store told me later that they thought I was her accomplice, which I knew nothing about it, but her father killed himself. Her stepfather was abusive to her mother, and for years I've sort of tried to puzzle out what did that. We're no longer friends, obviously, but, you know, what started that with her? And she couldn't stop. She lost jobs. She lost friends.
Yeah, I think you've written about this or have been interviewed about this before, Frank Farley.
Yes. Well, firstly, earlier I mentioned that the high rates of mental health services that show up in sort of petty theft cases, and the perpetrator often has this history of mental health services. Kleptomania is a very specific sort of diagnosis, and it seems that people with that diagnosis, if they get that diagnosis, they kind of experience an increasing sense of tension immediately before committing the theft, and a kind of gratification or release at the time of committing that theft. And so those cases are kind of different than many other cases. The stealing is not related necessarily to anger or to vengeance or necessarily to sort of impulse control problems, but there is this kind of sense of tension that builds up, and then they, you know, steal whatever it is, and there's this release afterwards. And so kleptomania is a kind of special case.
Let's go next to Jan in Toma. Hello, Jan.
Good morning.
Morning.
We owned a small mom-and-pop gas station in a small town, and we got broken into several times over the years, and they would always take candy bars or soda or a little change out of the cash register, and that you almost kind of expect. But one time, and we were raising a large family, didn't have huge amounts of money, we decided to redecorate the bathroom for customers, because, you know, sometimes those bathrooms in those little stations aren't very appealing,
mm-hmm.
and painted and hung two pictures on the wall. Well, it wasn't a week, and someone had stolen the pictures off the wall, two paintings, and they had passed them out the window to an accomplice. We could tell by the footprints. So,
Jan, I'm sure they were nice paintings, I can't imagine they were, you know, really valuable for these thieves.
They weren't. They were just attractive pictures, mm-hmm. but, you know, and I can remember the other thefts never bothered me, but that one I just felt totally violated. I don't know if it's because it was more personal or just the thoughts that they would be so cruel as to steal the pictures right off the wall.
Yeah. Words of consolation, Frank Farley?
Well, Jan seems to have taken it pretty well. Yeah, you know, it's that might be an impulse thing, and they looked nice. You know, what Jan was doing is trying to make things nice for the customers, and in a sense, they were just raising an opportunity, one way of looking at it, for theft. And so the person looked at those, and they were really nice, and so impulsively they took them.
We have a comment, Holly on Facebook, who was writing to the question, what makes people steal, or why do people steal? She wrote, probably heroin. Is it a fair assumption to blame addiction for some of the petty crime that we see, that especially that involves money?
Yes, it is for some of those, definitely. And they'll fence the goods they steal, you know, for drugs, or they'll, you know, fence them for money and then use the money to buy the drugs. And so, yes, in fact, that's considered a significant part of petty theft. Big, big, big time theft, you know, knocking over a bank. You know, if the famous Brinks robbery, for example, that is a part of the lore in this country. That's a big thing, big time planning, etc. Petty theft is, you know, sort of at the spur of the moment. It's opportunistic, whatever you see. And if you're addicted, then, you know, you're going to grab it and then try to sell it somewhere. And it's at a very high level. There's a lot of theft going on. And the estimates, as I mentioned, more than 10 million people have been caught in the last 5 years in this country.
We're going to check news, Frank, from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about theft, why people steal, how it feels if someone steals from us, how we can deal with this. And we welcome any questions or experiences that you might want to share. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine with Frank Farley, who is a psychologist at Temple University. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, and if you just joined us, someone stole my wallet last week. And we are talking about why people steal and what it does to the victims of that theft and welcoming any stories that you might have. Has anything like this ever happened to you? Has anyone ever stole anything from you? Or, I'm doubting we're going to get a call like this, but maybe the statute of limitations is probably has probably expired. Have you ever stolen anything? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We're talking with Frank Farley. He is a professor of psychological, organizational, and leadership studies at Temple University, former president of the American Psychological Association, former faculty member of the UW-Madison. And here's I said that maybe we should share some good stories too. And here's one from Albert. Albert on Facebook says, "I was quite fortunate last year. I was at the post office and absentmindedly left my wallet right there on the side of the counter where you fill out the paperwork. Some good person found it and took it to the front desk and turned it in. It's something I myself would have done, and I'd like to think that there are more people like us than there are those people like the one who victimized you." And Frank Farley, when we're talking about putting it into perspective, maybe that's part of the perspective we should put it into, is that the vast majority of people are good?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, most of us can go through our lives, you know, if you mentioned it, you haven't had many thefts, I haven't had. And that just bespeaks that goodness factor, you know, that you've been well-raised, you've been told that this is what you do, and you do it. So basically, you know, the human race is fundamentally good. I think that, and you know, in psychology, there's a whole sort of raging debate over this kind of thing as to whether people can be said to be good or evil, or is it the situations they're put into that make them that way? And so the argument by some people is that anybody under certain circumstances could be evil or could be bad, could steal, and that it's not a personal trait of being good. It sort of depends on the situation you're in. And so you and I, Joy, we could steal under certain circumstances, given that theory. Or the other theory is, no, there's sort of inherent goodness, and that we would never do that.
Yeah.
So it is actually an active debate going on. I tilt in the direction that there's inherent goodness, and that overrides many situations that we can get into. And so we, in fact, act well and act morally.
Well, here's Charles on Facebook who has some advice about moving past theft. Twice, he writes, I can remember that I was a victim of comparatively minor theft. I think the hard part was letting go of the idea that I personally might have been targeted. We know theft is largely means and opportunity with often just a tiny dash of motive. Only in rare circumstances are specific people or businesses targeted for personal reasons. So, Joy, first and foremost, your mental health depends on moving past the fear, concern that someone chose to steal from you, when it's most likely that someone saw an opportunity. But in my cases, I had to work at acknowledging that thought before I could let the theft go. Be well, be in peace. So
very nice.
Mm-hmm. And you, would you add anything to that, Frank?
Well, I mentioned earlier the impulse control problem and the opportunistic features of petty theft, and Charles has really put his finger on that. Another point too is that much of life, we often don't acknowledge that a significant part of our lives is sort of chancy, you know? It's just chance. We can't nail everything down and say A caused B. I knew why this thing happened. Often we don't know why it happened. And that, you know, one of the world's, the person who is considered the world's leading living psychologist, a person named Albert Bandura, has argued for a long time that there's an element of our lives that's just coincidental, it's chancy, and you're never going to figure it out.
Yeah,
and I think that's often a case in petty theft.
I already feel a whole lot better than I did a week ago today. Stan in Rice Lake. Hi, Stan.
I have a little story when I was young. It's kind of a moral story, kind of changed my whole idea about stuff. I was with my brother. I was maybe third grade. My brother was maybe fifth grade. And we were in a store, and I stole a piece of bubble gum. And I came out on the sidewalk, and my brother was with me. And I thought I'd be kind of cool in front of my brother. And I said, hey, I stole this piece of bubble gum. And all he said was, that was dumb. And it changed my whole idea of what it was like and what my big brother thought of me. And I think it just changed the idea of everything.
Yeah, there we go. You tried to impress your big brother, and he told you were dumb. And and I bet you didn't steal any more gum after that.
Nothing more, no. Pretty simple, but it made a big difference of who I was with.
Well, that's interesting. Peer pressure to be good, maybe. Any reaction to that story, Frank?
Well, peer pressure is the word. And, you know, we're social animals, and what other people think of us, particularly those close to us, matters big time. And so, you know, we often model after an older sibling or an older friend and so on, and what they say carries a lot of weight. So, again, we're social, you know, and you use the word peer pressure. When kids grow up, peer pressure becomes enormously important. Sometimes it can go in a negative direction, of course.
Right.
But here's a wonderful case, you know, with Stan, in which it was very positive.
Let's go
and
to Mike.
You know, we haven't mentioned the religious side, too, because most religions, you know, have proscriptions against this kind of thing.
Thou shalt not steal.
Yes.
Yeah. And... and I think the golden rule, do unto others as you want others to do unto you, plays into it as well. Let's go to Mike in Deerfield next. Hello, Mike.
Hi, how you doing, Joy?
Pretty good. I think you've got an interesting story here.
Yeah, sorry for your loss.
I'm living. I'm getting over it.
Oh, well, I used to go stop at this little restaurant on the way to work and have coffee, and I got to know this one older guy there. And I had a Zippo 8-ball lighter that used to collect from Camels, you know. And it cost you a lot of, you know, like 75 coupons for this lighter or whatever. But anyway, I lose a lot of Zippos. And I used to leave my Zippo on the counter on my cigarettes. And so one day it was missing, and I stopped at the restaurant. Well, here's my Zippo lighter. This guy's got my Zippo lighter. And I said, well, I used to have a lighter like that. He said, where'd you get yours at? He said, I got it for Father's Day. So I felt bad, you know, about the statutes of limitations, but I knew it was my lighter, so I just stole it back. And I kind of feel bad about it, but I knew it was my lighter.
How were you positive it was yours, Mike?
Well, you could just tell there's the nicks and stuff. I'm a mechanic. It was kind of beat up, but not, I would know, you know.
Yeah, so someone steals Mike's lighter, and he steals it back. I guess that's one way to deal with it, Frank.
Well, I don't think you would get prosecuted for that.
No. Is there, do you think there's a role for bystanders in preventing these petty crimes?
Oh, I would think so. Just mere presence of others and, you know, all the eyeballs and how that might impact us. And we were talking a minute ago about that whole social animal and relationship side of our lives. And that can come into play when you're in a group and disapproval, public disapproval, may become a factor. So, you know, we can help in fighting the war on petty theft. And, you know, it's not trivial. The total amount of dollar values and et cetera are very high. And by the way, it's estimated that $13 billion is stolen in any one year in the United States. So we can all get involved in reducing this by social pressure.
This is interesting. Linda on Facebook says, this happened to several of us at school, a school that I used to work at. The police placed a powder on our purses to catch the thief. At the end of the shift, they gathered the employees and told them that a light would make that powder glow. Only one person lifted their hands up immediately looking for the powder. She was also the only person that lit up the light. With the light, she lost her job, fined, and had to pay restitution. That's interesting. I'm wondering if these thieves are caught. I don't know. I'm hoping my thief gets caught.
Well, it's important for a civilized society, you know. To have the checks and balances on bad behavior, inappropriate behavior, and you know, we talked earlier about trust, and we need to be able to trust other people. You know, one thing we didn't touch upon, of course, was people who need money, and are stealing not impulsively but with a purpose because they're, you know, starving or really need it. We didn't get into that.
No, we didn't, and we have just a minute to go. But you know what? I'm still going to be making donations to food pantries and organizations that help low-income people, even though I was the victim of this kind of crime. And I think that might still make me feel better. I wish we had more time, Frank Farley. Thanks a lot for being with us.
You're welcome.
Frank Farley is a professor of psychological, organizational, and leadership studies at Temple University. Thanks to Kayla Blado and to Christy Taylor for producing and directing this program. Thanks for your stories and your advice. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.